This is an oral history recording at Westminster School on the 8th of December 2015 with Elizabeth Wells, archivist, and
John Glanfield.
To start off with, would you mind telling me a little bit about your family background so we can put you into context?
My family background is from Hampstead, London, where my father, Ernest, was an architect and built a house for himself and the family in Ranulph Road. And this was next door to the UCS playing fields, which were at the bottom of our garden. We had a plot of a quarter of an acre for quite a modest little house with large houses adjoining all round of successful people like VF Valley, again home borders. They owned Coty, and there was my pal up the road, a couple was Judge Sir somebody Watson, and people like that, stock jobbers, retired doctors, and Henry Hall, the BBC dance orchestra, gentleman lived down at the bottom of the road, and his son, also in Old Westminster, much younger obviously, was a boyfriend of my young sister, who is now 90. So,
and did you go to a prep school?
I went to a prep school called the Hall, Hampstead, and there I was from the age of, I suppose, it would be 8 or 9, perhaps, after Miss Fairbairn's nursery school. And the Hall saw me through, and I played cricket there, obviously. And, oh yes, St. Michael Marks and Spencer's, he was at school with us too. And I can remember him running out in quite a rainstorm in the middle of cricket match on Hampstead Cricket Ground, and sort of rushing around and dancing about, and he would always have sweets with him for everybody. So yes, my background really has a lot to do with my parents, who were not only into cricket big time, because my father was the old boys captain for many, many years. The matches were just down at the bottom of the garden, literally. It was a very large playing field, and the cricket pavilion, which he designed anyway. And there they were. And it was all about music at home, too. A lot of music, with rather well-known people, too. Myra Hess, for instance, the great Bach pianist, I did meet her once, was teaching my sister to play the piano. I only discovered that quite recently. And she was a lovely lady. So that's a walk up the Ranulph Road to get on a 2 bus. And on the top floor, in top hat obviously, and bum freezer, and go down through to Park Lane, where I could see the Queen and her young sister playing in the garden. Because it's a big stone wall that you could see into the garden, Duke of York's house. And down to Victoria, walked down Victoria Street, saved threepence, which was the bus fare, to get a Mars bar up Suts. Mars had been going a long time, and that was important.
So at what point did your parents decide to send you to Westminster School?
Well, it was all about UCS, as far as my father was concerned. And I've got pictures of him at Gower Street, where it was opposite the hospital. And there he was a sort of funny tam o'shanter on him, little breeches and things. And it would have been, he was born in 1875, so there he was, aged about 10 or more, actually at Gower Street, before they eventually moved to Hampstead. And
so they thought that they would send you to UCS, or
well,
your father wanted
yes, the
to?
Point is this, that it wasn't posh enough. That says everything about society in middle classes in those days. It had to be Westminster, no question. So John, who was never going to be much good anyway, quite frankly, and that goes right through my life, saw the headmaster, Dr. Costa White, or mostly Tite, as I told you. He was a lovely old boy, and he was very kind at the interview, after having taken common entrance, of course, which I must have scrambled through somehow. And he said, I don't think we need to have everybody clever here. We can have one of some ordinary people as well. So I scraped in to Westminster and was absolutely terrified for 1 year here.
So it was very intimidating at the beginning?
Oh, gosh, say that. Looking back on it, there's a touch of sadism here, I think, in the whole culture, because the house prefects were in a powerful position, would have you up on a charge if you were 5 minutes late for Abbey in the morning. And then you had to wait all day, because a little tiny piece of paper was given you your name on it by one of the boys, and you knew you were going to be tried that evening after school. And then you were beaten, because you're always guilty anyway. So I managed somehow or other to scrape through without getting whacked. I don't know how it happened, really. I suppose I must have been so frightened. I was terribly careful, perhaps. Shall I continue? Well, the motto, as you well know, is Dat Deus Incrementum. And for quite a long time, until quite recently, I thought, it's rather dull, isn't it? It's nothing like manners make his man. Now, that's really good. But then it struck me that there was some meaning to it, really, because three things. Architecture, here it is. Secondly, friends. And thirdly, music. And my hero, I mean, this is what school's given me. My hero is Johann Sebastian Bach, from the Christmas Oratorio in the first term until now. And, I mean, I thank the school for that, really. And friends, all the friends. So do I carry on now?
Yes, do tell us about people you remember.
Well, people, you see, for instance, my first best man, because I've had two wonderful wives, have a wonderful wife now, Derek Grucock. Now, he was very clever, although he wasn't in college, but I noticed he got a wing collar on. So I think at some stage he must have been upped. I don't think he was a school prefect. He was just very jolly and a good pianist too. And Derek said to me, come on, Johnny, old boy, go round to Abbey, I'm going to play Tiger Rag on the organ after school. Which he did, because that's cheeky. He was a very popular person, Derek Grucock, and then he, like me, went into the Royal Engineers, and he was on Monty's staff in the war, and carried his piano around with him, too, on campaign, Derek. And then I was his best man in New York. He married a very wealthy heiress there quite early on. And I won't go on about him too much, but he eventually came back and was the vice president of American Express with a lovely office at Haymarket. They're all gone, the friends, needless to say. Dick Woodwalk, particularly, we're still close to the family of Dick, and he was in the Mass 6 with me, which I couldn't do at all, of course. And he says, I've helped him with his Latin. I don't think it's true, but never mind. Dick Woodwalk is an absolutely great man, really, in many ways. He's a double blue at Cambridge, so only 2 years before we were all into the forces. Football and tennis. And I was the linesman for the first 11. Big deal. Offside. That's about all I had to do. Yes, Dick went into the Navy and got the Distinguished Service Cross. He was twice sunk, but never got his feet wet. So he did the Malta convoys and the Arctic convoys as well. And that wasn't too funny. And the funny stories about that, I can't go on forever. But yes, Dick and his family, and I'm still in touch. Youngest daughter, she was an enfant terrible, Catherine. She's now a doctor at a nearby hospice, and I've put my name down for it in the way of a bit of a check in advance. And she'll look after me, I know she will. She's a great fun. John Courtney Williams Trefgarn, that's a name to conjure with, otherwise known as Giglamps at school. And he and I were very close to each other. He lived with his mum in Maida Vale. And the thing was that we were crazy about jazz and swing, and particularly the Duke of Ellington. Greatest American ever, as far as I'm concerned, Duke Ellington. Benny Goodman, these sort of people. Talking about the 30s and 40s, and then it gets more difficult for me, but never mind. That was John Treff, and he served in the army very well as well. There were a Duncan family, and Ronald, of Westminster's, a lawyer and a commodore in the Navy, and Charles, was the middle one, my special friend, and he served gallantly in the war, followed by Michael. That was the Duncans, and they all worked for the Bank of England, and lived in Ealing by and large. Then they have the Bens, you see. Now, Tony Benn was junior to me, so I didn't really know him, but Michael Benn, Uphome Waters as well. He's very verbose, but a nice man, very pleasant indeed. I've only just forgiven my sister for dating Tony Benn. But there you are. It's a long time ago, Tony Benn. We had Substance and Shadow. You probably don't have anything like that now. No. So in your first year, anything you did wrong, your substance was going to be punished for it, not you. So I can't remember who my substance was, but my shadow was a chap called Gardner. And he was a philosopher all his life. He was at Oxford, and he had one of those houses that the university owns. I forget just where, just outside the fringe there. Went and visited him there, and it was jolly nice it was too. That was Gardner, my shadow. He was good as gold, he had to be. I think he was always a bit like that anyway. Now Ashburnham, which of course is all the wrong house, you understand, there, the enemy across the yard there, was Ian Abrahams. Now, they were friends of ours and lived in Ranulph Road, Hampstead. And Ian was about my age. And one day, Daddy said, you're gonna have boxing now, John. So, we're going to see Ian running. Well, he gave me a bloody nose straight away, didn't he? That was the end of boxing for John. He became head of boxing at Cambridge. And he foozled his way into the Navy. I couldn't because I'm colourblind, but I'm sure he sort of tricked somehow. The test you have to take is a Japanese test, you know, it's all these coloured dots, and there's a number in there you can't see if you're colourblind. He got in and he served on torpedo boats. And I thought that was a really glamorous thing to do. And then I met him at one of the Eliza dinners. Must be years ago now, I'm sure. Nice to see Ian again. And then another one, Peter Ustinov. And he and I used to go boating on Regent's Park Lake together because we were in the art class here. And he was very nice company indeed, but nothing special academically here. He certainly came good later. I can remember meeting him at Covent Garden. Peter Ustinov. Tony Dearmer was a close friend of mine, Canon Percy Dearmer's son, and he was such a nice character. I think he is probably on the list you're going to show me and give me later of Didn't Survive, I'm not sure. So up we were at the BBC. Tony and one of his sisters, we made a little crew for Canon Dearmer, who ran a children's service, I think it was once a month probably, on a Sunday afternoon. and we had nice chats, just sort of written, sung a little bit and answered questions, had said a little piece, and then we had tea in the canteen, the BBC canteen. Yes, happy days. Donald Swan, Michael Flanders and Donald Swan, I don't know whether they knew them each other very well here, they might have done, I think. But Donald Swan was a star in the school. There he was, up in the classical seventh before you could say anything, and was rather better than the headmaster, early too, that is said. Then, of course, he was entertaining us with Mozart piano concertos at the age of 15, I think. He's a lovely man, and my wife knew him too, in the course of her Christian work that she did, and found him absolutely delightful. He was a charmer, Donald Swan, and they really were something special. We had a VC, of course, Wakeford. I think he was up Grants actually, and he was a solicitor in Bedford Row, quite near. Our office was in Raymond Buildings, Gray's Inn, where my father was, so I didn't ever know him. Shall I carry on? You can ask me.
Yes, do.
I'm just sort of... I'm going back to Bach for a moment, because I'm sorry about these jottings. But the angels make music to God. It's Bach, isn't it? But when they're amongst themselves, it's Mozart. And God eavesdrops. I love that. I think that's so clever. Yeah. On the lighter side of life, entertaining us in those days were people called the Weston Brothers. Now, Kenneth Weston was in college, not up college. That's right. He was college. He was clever. And he used to sing with Cicely Courtnage, and they were very popular on stage. She's talking about light humour, really, and music. And his brother, who was up her boarders, was Claude. Now, he wasn't so bright, but he was terribly funny. And these two were a scream, really, entertained us. I do remember Claude, but Kenneth was older, and... They were big people in the entertainment world in London, really. I've gone long enough about that. I've talked to the headmaster about George Herbert, got that off my chest. And he made me so happy when he said, well, we had a service for George Herbert, the great metaphysical poet and hymn writer, last year, because he's got a friend who's very involved with George Herbert. Mm. So I was so awfully pleased about that. He got a day to himself, his festival day, church being his 27th of February. And I remember this because I was at the memorial service at St Paul's Cathedral with Sir Roger Cork, the Lord Mayor, who was a close friend of ours. And and they said, this is George Herbert's day. And I thought, quite right too. It's like a saint's day in a way. Yes. Just dodging from one thing to another. I'm sorry this is so disjointed.
It's okay.
But the school was facing great difficulty after the war to get money to put things up back again. And it was, there were frequent appeals, and I remember we contributed twice in the immediate post-war years. And now I'm a cottager, I don't have a house or flat or anything. I'm just a cottager. I'm very happy about that, but I don't need to, because there's money now. Mm. What with A.A. Milne and everything.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. And I mean, here we are. I mean, it's just unbelievable, this transformation school here. After the war, the first dinner dance we had all dressed up, white tie, and a bottle in your coat tails of corkage, you see. Rather expensive to have a drink anything. And that was the first one, Grosvenor House. After that, there were dues at Hurlingham. It's probably all in your records anyway. And then, of course, every year, dinner in College Hall. And I hadn't realised until reading just now that that was the Abbot's dining hall, originally. College Hall, got lots of memories of that, like people flicking butter pats up onto the ceiling. I mean, how disgraceful. I mean, the behaviour really was pretty rough. We're looking back on it. I mean, it's these very sophisticated young people here now, all looking absolutely spot on. But yes, then we had, they were enjoyable, the Eliza dinners, because you could meet chums and drink sherry down beforehand in Ashburnham and have a nice time and look at the top table and see who was up there. And it was good. Yes, the last time I saw dear old Charles Duncan, he fainted in the middle of it all, had to be taken off to St. Thomas's Hospital. He was all right. Yes, I think I may have mentioned before that DJ Knight, Dolly Knight, was a classics master here, and he lived not far away in Warwick Square, I think. He's a nice man, really, but he wasn't the most gifted of teachers, I suppose, but he did get a bit irritated and chucked chalk at you if you misbehaved at all, I remember. And then Mr. Willett and Judge Jeffries room and classical trance. Transitus, Bill Franklin then, and Classical Shell, I think it was the Shell, doing Hamlet, Wordsworth and Shelley. I mentioned John Carlton, didn't I, that he taught history here, and he wasn't terrifically good, but he was a charmer, and looked the goods as well. He did look, there was something royal about him, and it may well be true that he was one of those, the other side of the blanket, or however you put it, to Edward the Seventh. Then, of course, he was headmaster here. Then we had Pansy Peebles. Now, Pansy Peebles was sort of always walk about like this, you know, and everybody called him Pansy Peebles. And his brother, actually, was captain of the English cricket team. Yes. And these two delightful clerics who taught me, such nice men. Llewellyn, he took me through confirmation, which was done by the Bishop of Ripon in Abbey, and then Murray Rust, who was head of the corps here, he had the Mass 6. I think the Mass 7 must have been way up in the clouds somewhere, I never knew, because it wouldn't be anything to do with me. Murray Rustin, he just sort of let me stooge around the Abbey, sketching really, with the headmaster's approval, of course. Yes, going back to the challenge, I didn't realise until I just read that originally it was a question of some sort of discussion going on between the candidates. It was verbal. And that's, I think it's absolutely priceless, really. And there's a thing called, a periodical called Picture Post came out in the post-war years. It's sort of quite colourful and popular thing. And right on the front of it was nobody else but Joanna Lumley. And there she's clicking, waterboard, going on, and she'd won the challenge. She was up against it was sort of, what do I mean, imaginary, that's not the word. She was up against two great pundits of the day, very learned gentlemen, Joanna Lumley. I mean, can you believe everything in the papers? Probably not, but that's who she was. She must be quite ancient now. She's got to be late 60s or probably, I don't know, but never mind. That was... Now, I've left with you some rules, a little pink book, and the procedure about getting into trouble here. First of all, the uppercase in the house, where you're tried by the house prefects. If it were more serious, it was the housemaster you had to go and see and be taken to task. The ultimate was a school case, and I only saw that twice, I think. One of them was a scholar here. He had to walk round with his, carrying his mortarboard and gown for the rest of one term at least, anyway, in disgrace. And the headmaster drew out of the old table from the drawers on it, in up square, the whole school was there, these two, what do you call, yard brushes, not brushes, but...
birches.
Fine, birches. And a ritual with on your hand, you see, in front of everybody. Can you imagine how frightful that was? After which you were beaten by the school sergeant afterwards, in private.
Can you remember what he'd done to deserve the
punishment? I think he had to, probably was cheating. Really, I think so. And the pancake grease, of course, I think I may have mentioned before. Well, you had to be the strongest and roughest chap in every class, had one. Changed into old clothes, and up, was it 15 feet in the air? Something like that was the bar, and a pancake about that size. And this was the head chef, which is right over there, and right, everybody greasing like anything. And it was just like a rugger scrum, really. And the winner gets a golden sovereign, you see. And that was in the papers for years. It's a sort of event. Pancake grease.
Was it an honour to take part?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very much. Definitely.
I've got lots of questions.
Crumbs.
I was wondering, you talked about coming into school on the bus and then walking down from Victoria. Did your parents ever think about having you board at the school, or were you always...
Oh, there? No. John boy. Oh, no. I was sunbum when I was little. That's our sort of cricket mascot. Oh, no. John was far too precious for anything like that.
And no. Was your status at the school different as a day pupil?
I would say probably yes. I think the boarders definitely looked, probably didn't say so, but they probably looked down on us, probably quite rightly, I suppose. We were just day boys, you know.
Did you get to see inside any of the boarding houses?
No, absolutely not. No, there was no going into other people's houses, except Ashburnham. But that was only for later in Liza dinners, yes.
And did you, was your boarding house, sorry, your day house comfortable, number 18?
Not at all. I mean, it's like going into a workhouse almost, compared with what we're seeing now. Yeah. Not at all comfortable. There was the odd bench right under the window, lockers, of course. And they were. It was a little more comfortable in the middle. I think I actually made that in the end, which is a very small room, a quarter the size of this, I'm sure. And there was an odd chair there. And a ping-pong table in the middle of the under, of course. Yes, so there was ping-pong. Oh, you reminded me of something else now. On arriving, you had to be blooded, didn't you? So you had to stand up on the ping pong table and sing a song. The horror. And then seeing I suppose got a reasonable voice, I was invited to take part in Yeoman of the Guard and have a part to sing play. Oh, I couldn't face it. So I just said, I'm sorry, I can't do it.
What song did you sing when you stood on the ping pong table? Can you remember?
I can't remember that. And these are sort of, it happens in so many walks of life that you have to be bloodied, don't you? I suppose. I don't know, Tom was looking at me with a certain smile. Yes. What were we talking about?
Just what the house was like, really.
Yes, well, I mean, the house prefects was quite a decent, quite nice room. Not big, of course. All small. But it had something about it that said who they were, you know. It was a little bit more respectable, really. I forgot to mention that the Daily Mirror was on the under table. The Daily Mirror. Every morning. Who delivered that? I cannot think. So you had to check up on what this lovely girl was up to next. And it was a caricature, really. And she hadn't got an awful lot on, but it was the first thing. Oh, let's come see what Jane. It was Jane. That was the sort of ritual in the morning on arriving. You get to see, get a paper. Yeah.
When you started, were you in the classical fourth, did you say? Which form were you in to start off with?
Classical fourth. Mm. With DJ Knight, my house master.
And was it?
I think he played cricket with my dad. It's apocryphal, this, but I think it's because of that that I got in.
And what did you study in the classical fourth? Was it just Latin and Greek, or did you do a bit of everything?
Yes, just like that.
Mm. And how did you progress in the school?
Not terribly well. I got common entrance in the end, but only by sort of not very... I mean, nothing like today, nothing like that. I think it was sort of half a dozen subjects at the most.
And you ended up in the mathematical six at the end.
But most of the time I was sketching around in Abbey, getting to know Lawrence Tanner and things like that.
Did you ever want to do sciences? No,
I couldn't imagine that. Much too difficult. That would be the science department. I was sort of floated through. I loved my music with Mad Sock.
So Mad Sock was Madrigal Society?
Madrigal Society, Mad Sock.
And what did you do? Did you get together and listen to records, or did you...
No, we were practicing all the time for the next performance, which happened every term. Started off with King Arthur's Purcell, and went on from there. I can't remember too much more. So that was good.
Did you perform up school?
Yes, always. I think I've probably written all this about, but the first time it was... the master was Dr. Lofthouse, Thornton Lofthouse, Tubby Lofthouse, he was called. And he was such a lovely man, very, very endearing, really, but he made a wobbly start. All the parents, of course. And what happens on all these occasions anywhere is rabbits, friends and relations are there, the audience. And there it was. He stopped after a couple of two or three bars and said, turned round to the audience and said, I am sorry. And he was in tears. We've made a poor start. We're going to start again. So we did. He's such a nice man. Tubby Lofthouse. The Abbey or choir master and organist son was at his home borders to Bullock. Ernest Bullock was a very stern head of music in Abbey. But that was another side of life, which of course we didn't see, because they're quite separate, the choir school and Westminster.
But did you get to see a lot of music performed in Westminster Abbey? as part of the school?
Not really, no. No, we didn't. But we did go across the road to Central Hall, Westminster, where Sir Malcolm Sargent frequently came and gave a concert for young people, and it was mostly the school year, really. And so off we went and saw the great man conducting. Messiah, everything, which I later sang with the Huddersfield Choral Society when I was in the army with one stripe up, not very far from Huddersfield. So that was Malcolm Sargent again.
And did you learn an instrument whilst you were at school?
No. I absolutely failed completely. I should have been doing this, you see, unless my sister's got my father's abilities in life, which I haven't. I think I'm much more my mother, who wasn't she wasn't the driving force in the family, but she was very attractive, and she also could play the piano, but mostly from hearing, really. And there's lots of music. I've lost myself again now.
No, I was just asking about music at the school.
Yes.
And did other boys play instruments? Was there an orchestra or anything
yes,
like that?
Yes, I think there must have been, but nothing compared with today, I'm quite sure. I can't remember too much about that.
And what was a typical day like? You would come in the morning on the bus and walk down from Victoria.
Yes, and straight into Abbey, 9 o'clock sharp. And that was a service conducted by the head, and mostly it was Rather Christie. He was pretty good too, I think. He was a good headmaster. Yes.
And then after Abbey, you
after
go...
Abbey, well, straight into up to the classical fourth, quick march, and that went on until into the afternoon, I suppose, except on games days, which you still have, still games afternoons. And of course there was the begging a play. So you know all this, I'm sure. When the king was going to visit, and sometimes he did, he begged a play. It's a day off for everybody.
And was the food any good? Did you have lunch in College Hall?
College Hall.
Yeah.
Yes, behaviour wasn't as, I'm sure, as good as it is now. But, yes, it was always College Hall. And I don't think the food was that bad, really. I can't remember too much about it. You were with your chums, and you had to grease to get into College Hall up the steps there. And who would get in there first was the general idea.
And was it a sort of proper, were you served at your places, or...?
Yes, I think we were in those days, before they had a hatch and going there. Yes, we were served, I'm pretty sure.
And it wasn't too bad, the food?
It wasn't too bad.
We were talking a bit earlier about the fact that the king came to visit the school not long after his coronation to see the Latin play. And I was wondering if you could tell us what you remember about that occasion.
Yes, well, it was their entrance into Yard here, which I remember so clearly because they were looking so splendid. And he was in white tie, of course, with medals and things, and she looked gorgeous. Elizabeth with a wonderful, beautiful, great big white dress. And I just see them now in my mind. Came through, and they had to sit through, let's face it, a pretty gruelling evening. Nobody could understand a thing, really, except for the good classical people. And if you had to, it was time to laugh, then the prefect was wagging his little stick with ribbon on the top of it. That meant you had to laugh. It's pathetic.
And were you sitting right up in the gods to watch the play?
Yes. Right up, right at the back, high up at the back. So in my mind's eye, it was quite big, but actually it wasn't that big, the theatre, which is upstairs here. For the life of me, I couldn't understand how college could be college, and yet there's a theatre in the middle of it.
They built it from scratch every year.
Yes, they did. Yes. I think I've read somewhere it was all sort of specially constructed, I think.
Well, I've never worked out whether scholars slept when they were building the theatre and performing the play.
No.
They must have gone somewhere. But
do you think that the whole of college was made into the theatre?
I think most of it, yes.
I mean, that's my recollection too. Goodness me, what a kerfuffle.
Yes. I know, it's incredible to think of them doing it now. I can understand why they didn't start it up again in that form after the war. I can see why they stopped it. Do you remember the coronation at all? Did you get to go to the coronation?
Well, yes, that's that coronation. Because my mind centres on Elizabeth's coronation, which I won't go into now because that's not the point. Because I came right up to the finishing line for that one. I can only remember the scholars crying out, Vivat.
But you were in the Abbey when it
yes.
happened. Yeah.
Yes, and the lying in state as well. Mm. Yes, in Westminster Hall. They haven't messed about with it, Westminster Hall. It's just perfectly all right. It's really one of the grandest rooms in the world, I think.
Very special place, isn't it? Yeah. And did you get to go around the area much as part of being at school here? Did you get to go into Parliament more at all? Or?
Yes, we did go to Parliament once, I think. I seem to remember. Yeah.
Did you go and see plays in the West End or anything like that? Or?
As a pupil, no. I was too hard at work in the evening trying to keep up, you know, with prep and stuff. That's good in those school days, yes.
And you said you started to like drawing and drawing buildings.
Yes, well, Daddy was always determined that I was going to be a great architect. Of course, he wasn't at all, but he in those days, many of the people like me did what your parents told you, or made it quite clear that that's what you were going to be. And after all, he was quite right, because he could see I wasn't getting many great shakes. But if I had a right partner who really could design and had a gift, John would be all right. And so it has turned out wonderful.
You've very kindly given us some of the drawings you did of Westminster Abbey when you were a pupil.
Well, that's how I had to do that, I suppose, to get into University College and the Bartlett School of Architecture. So I suppose I must have presented that to them as a sort of little portfolio, really, of what bits. And I think there are other drawings, but I don't know where they are now.
And you mentioned that you got to meet Lawrence Tanner.
Yes, I did get to know him quite well because I was always mooching around sketching. I mean, I just love the whole place, really, especially the nave and the magnificence of it, despite the monuments. Everybody wanted to be next to Geoffrey Chaucer's tomb. So, you probably know that. So, any famous person who is there, the closer you can get to the beautiful tomb, that was definitely good news. Yes, if only there were a few more like that instead of what we see there, which is, dear, oh dear, this is, what shall I say, Victorian grandeur largely, and before that too, I think it is. So, what do you think of the French cathedrals? You don't see that kind of thing. I mean, Notre Dame is magnificent. I even had proper towers. And Abbey was sort of just bereft of all that. I can't think why London was like that, except you've got St Paul's, of course, but that wasn't terrific anyway until Wren came along. You think of the other, all this Canterbury, York, Winchester, Salisbury, to name but a few, and Abbey just sort of got sort of half done. And even though in recent times you've been thinking of putting a little something up at the crossing.
Mm.
Whether they've given that up, though, I do not know.
I think it's on the back burner at the moment.
Really?
Yes.
Possible.
But, yeah.
That's a challenge for an architect.
Mm.
Mm.
What else was I just going to ask? towards the end of your time at the school, the political situation in Europe must have been getting a little bit fraught. And I wondered what the experience at school was like. Did people talk about...
I'm trying to remember. I don't think that at that age we were so connected and involved as our parents obviously were. That's my sort of faint recollection. I can't remember being particularly scared at that time, in the same way that I was terrified in the post-war Cold War we had. That was much, much more concern. No, I can't. I think we were all having good time, really, enjoying ourselves, and yeah.
And you mentioned earlier that you remembered von Ribbentrop, who was a pupil.
Well, I never knew him because he just sort of arrived in a... It was like Korda, the filmmaker's Korda, K-O-R-D-A. He was there. And they came up in their Rolls Royces, you see, sort of delivered on the spot. But they didn't make any impact at school at all. No. I don't think so, anyway.
And then, just to round up, you finished here and went on to the Bartlett School to study architecture. Could you just do a sort of very brief what happened next?
What happened next was, there I was into the deep end again, along with, 40 of us in the class. And it was all about classics. It's right inside me, this. So much of the first year was drawing out with pen and ink. You had to mix it up and do these classical drawings of the Parthenon or whatever, and then you had to do a picture of it, I mean about that size, double elephant or whatever it's called. And then a lot of time was devoted in the first year to the study of Greece, the Greek, yes. And there were always exercises going on in design way, right the way through, but yes, I wasn't one of the top students, but I managed to sort of getting a minus for anything anyway, sort of A, B, C gradings. Not a lot of A's for John, no. But there were one or two very, very bright people there. About a third dropped out in the course of, they couldn't make it really. It was 7 years, it used to be. And because of the war they let us down and lightly. I continued studying actually in Burma still by correspondence course in the jungle, if you like, by a chap in London who would send it out to me and I could go on studying, because I obviously had to get out of the army and do what I felt I wished to do.
And after your time in the army you did come back and practiced as an architect?
After 6 years. I was an article pupil to my father, alongside Roy Corby, who was also his article pupil. He was good. And he went off to be a gunner in the war and got the MC as well, and came back. We both came back in 1946, after demob in summer 46, straight back into Raymond Building's Gray's Inn, where the practice was, my father's practice. And it was just Daddy, Roy Corby, me, and his secretary, Marjorie. And Roy was a very quiet person indeed in life, but they seemed to be popping off at lunchtime together sometimes, you know. And of course, they married, and Father was furious. How could he do that? Take my secretary, etc.
Because presumably once they got married she couldn't be the secretary any longer.
Well, no, yeah, she did continue, actually. It was all right in the end. The first parade, the Trooping of the Colour, for instance. You really got me going now. Roy and I wished to be there, so we went off to see it. What a thrill. after the war, and Marjorie came as well. And so off Daddy would go down to Hennigy's wine bar in Holborn to have his ritual sherry and biscuits at lunch. Normally he would take a secretary for that, because it's got all the chapels. Hennigy's is famous. A huge, great big stove in the middle, and these little chapels in there. You could sit down there quietly and enjoy a little something, see. And so we shoved off, the three of us, and we were thrilled to bits, of course we were. And gosh, Daddy just blew his top, really, at that. Oh dear. Yes, we were very naughty. I love seeing the troop in the colour now.
Is there anything you wanted to say that I haven't given you a chance to say? Anything that you'd like to say, that you'd like to add, that I've not asked you about, or... That's always a very difficult question, I'm afraid, because I know sometimes people go away and then they think, oh, I wish I'd...
Yes, I'm just trying to...
Anything about the church? And the things you've done with the churches.
Oh yes, well I finished up in, the practice got quite a lot bigger. I mean, I think of about 30 of us altogether. My partners were energetic and they were getting lots of work in other directions. And John was in his rather humble corner. Well, I was senior partner when my father died. I was qualified just before Roy. And John was in his corner sort of seeing to his churches, which is a lot of were London diocese to start with, putting city churches back again after ruin, things like that, and in the suburbs and all round. So it wasn't very profitable, my side of it, but it did keep going. And the practice lasted 99 years in the end. And that was how it was, really. And the church work did keep on. You have a system, you probably know, called the Quinquennial Survey. All churches of the Church of England have to be inspected every 5 years. And details about what needs to be done and how important, etc. So that started by the London Diocesan Fund, began that, and there I was with a lot of churches to see to, and parsonages as well. And that just went on and on and on, really. And then after that it was English Heritage, where I was a consultant of that, for the taxpayer to see the same sort of thing being done to the churches. Things like that, advisory committees, whereby in a diocese, anything done to a church to change it in any way has to go with the approval of the diocese, and that's the Diocesan Advisory Committee. So I was on that all the time, and I'm going to have lunch tomorrow with taking them out, Alan and Janet Frost. Now, Alan Frost is a real pundit. He mends Windsor Castle if it goes up in smoke, and things like that. And he was the head bell ringer here. And I think he's sort of semi-retired now, although he said the other day he was at St. Paul's doing it, for the Queen was there. Such a good friend, Alan Frost, and I've lost myself again.
I'm going to take that. I've got to go teach.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tommy.
I've got to go and teach, I'm afraid.
A hard life.
Isn't it? Got to oil my place.
Thank you, Tomo, for everything you've done.
Thank you for all of this. It's been wonderful to listen to. Thank you.
John rescued we have a very old church in our village, and John was instrumental in rescuing it.
Yes. So perhaps I can see a show one day. I thought of you a lot in the night about mystery plays, Tomo. I started my iPad up on it too.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Have you got to, you've got to go now.
I've got to be in rehearsal sort of but, 10 minutes ago.
Anyway, my girlfriend was the daughter of the Lord Lieutenant of Dorset at South Leachit Manor.
Yeah.
And, oh, come on.
I'll tell you about it later. I'll tell you afterwards.
God, yeah. Yes, I mustn't keep you from your students. Students.
Cheers.
Yes.
I'll see you really soon.
Thank you so much, Tommy.
No problem. Safe journey home, guys.
Yeah, lots of car.
Excellent. Cheers.
Ah, bless him. Oh, what a wonderful chance it's been for me today. Thanks to my friends here.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for giving up your time.
It's oh, it isn't really like fun. That when you're retired. it's your time.
But you're sure to remember lots of things when you go.
Yes. Yes, Tomo and the Mystery Plays. I have in my mind's eye, Ruth, I thought, now, wouldn't it be wonderful? There are two things here, and both he and Carla are in theatre and religion, too.
Exactly.
And now, what's to keep Tomo forming his own mystery play company? Or you've got to get to some Togs Medieval.
I mentioned it to him a couple of years ago, that was, seemed to be a natural meeting of the two aspects of his life, of drama and theology.
He could, write the plays and perform them. Anywhere, all the great cathedrals.